Chapter 18. Alfresco Dining. Marley didn't fit into the Boca Raton scene any better than I did. Boca has a disproportionate share of the world's smallest, yappiest, most pampered dogs. They were precious little things, often with bows in their fur and cologne spritzed on their necks, some even with painted toenails, and you would spot them peeking out of a designer handbag at you as you waited in line at the bagel shop, snoozing on their mistress's towels at the beach, leading the charge on a rhinestone-studded leash into an antique store. They were petite, sophisticated, and of discriminating taste. Marley was big, clunky, and a sniffer of genitalia. He wanted so much to have them invite him into their circle. They so much were not about to. When we took strolls around town, the high-rent pooches were always worth getting all choked up over. Each time Marley spotted one, he would break into a gallop, barreling up to it. Each time Marley would be roundly snubbed, not only by the Boca mini-dog, but by the Boca mini-dog's owner, who would snatch up young Fifi or Susie or Cherie as if rescuing her from the jaws of an alligator. Marley didn't seem to mind. Outside dining was a big part of the Boca experience, and many restaurants in town offered alfresco seating beneath palm trees, whose trunks and fronds were studded with strings of tiny white lights. The Boca mini-dog was an important part of the alfresco ambiance. Couples brought their dogs with them and hooked their leashes to the wrought iron tables, where the dogs would contentedly curl up at their feet, or sometimes even sit up at the table beside their masters, holding their heads up in an imperious manner, as if miffed by the waiter's inattentiveness. One Sunday afternoon, Jenny and I thought it would be fun to take the whole family for an outside meal at one of the popular meeting places. We loaded the boys and the dog into the minivan and headed to Meisner Park, the downtown shopping plaza modeled after an Italian piazza with wide sidewalks and endless dining possibilities. We settled on a restaurant with one of the more affordable menus on the strip and hovered nearby until a sidewalk table opened up. The table was perfect, shaded with a view of the piazza's central fountain, and heavy enough, we were sure, to secure an excitable 100-pound lab. I hooked the end of Marley's leash to one of the legs, and we ordered drinks all around, 2 beers and 2 apple juices. To a beautiful day with my beautiful family. Jenny held her glass for a toast. We clicked our beer bottles. The boys smashed their sippy cups together. That's when it happened. So fast, in fact, that we didn't even realize it had happened. All we knew was that one instant we were sitting at a lovely outdoor table toasting the beautiful day, and the next our table was on the move, crashing its way through the sea of other tables, banging into innocent bystanders and making a horrible, ear-piercing, industrial-grade shriek as it scraped over the concrete pavers. In that first split second, before either of us realized exactly what bad fate had befallen us, it seemed distinctly possible that our table was possessed, fleeing our family of unwashed Boca invaders, which most certainly did not belong here. In the next split second, I saw that it wasn't our table that was haunted, but our dog. Marley was out in front, chugging forward with every ounce of rippling muscle he had, the leash stretched tight as piano wire. In the fraction of a second after that, I saw just where Marley was heading, table in tow. 50 feet down the sidewalk, a delicate French poodle lingered at her owner's side, nose in the air. I remember thinking, what is his thing for poodles? Jenny and I both sat there for a moment longer, drinks in hand, the boys between us in their stroller, our perfect little Sunday afternoon, unblemished, except for the fact that our table was now motoring its way through the crowd. An instant later, we were on our feet, screaming, running, apologizing to the customers around us as we went. I was the first to reach the runaway table as it surged and scraped down the piazza. I grabbed on, planted my feet, and leaned back with everything I had. Soon Jenny was beside me, pulling back too. In the middle of all the bedlam, Jenny actually turned and called over her shoulder, "Be right back, boys!" "Be right back?" She made it sound so ordinary, so expected, so planned, as if we often did this sort of thing, deciding on the spur of the moment that, oh, why not? It might just be fun to let Marley lead us on a little table stroll around town, maybe doing a bit of window shopping along the way before we circled back in time for appetizers. When we finally got the table stopped and Marley reeled in, just feet from the poodle and her mortified owner, I turned back to check on the boys, and that's when I got my first good look at the faces of my fellow alfresco diners. It was like a scene out of one of those E.F. Hutton commercials, where an entire bustling crowd freezes in silence, waiting to hear a whispered word of investment advice. Men stopped in mid-conversation, cell phones in their hands. Women stared with open mouths. The Boca lights were aghast. It was finally Connor who broke the silence. "Waddy, go walk!" he screamed with delight. A waiter rushed up and helped me drag the table back into place as Jenny held Marley, still fixated on the object of his desire, in a death grip. "Let me get some new place settings." "Oh, that won't be necessary," Jenny said nonchalantly. "We'll just be paying for our drinks and going."